I appreciate the opportunity to do this. When Brother Terry approached me about this, that initial meeting, I had no idea what was going on in the back of his mind. I thought we were just sharing some polite information about each other. I retired in the summer of 2010 and moved back home here to the mountains of East Tennessee. And God led us to Faith Baptist to be part of the ministry there. And so I'm just getting to know people, and I thought that's what I was doing with Brother Terry. Little did I know what he was thinking. Because when I retired from 3M, I had determined, I had determined that I wasn't going to do that anymore. That's probably why I lost my hair and other things, you know, having to deal with people issues all of those years. In fact, I jokingly tell my wife and adult daughters that it was my job and teenage daughters that caused my hair to disappear. Of course, we know that's not true. But challenged to do this again. I've been retired for a couple of years, well, 4 years now. And so in those 4 years, I've been doing the fun things of retirement. One of which is woodworking, because I really enjoy woodworking, and having the opportunity to help work on this room just was really a blessing. And I enjoy doing some other things that I haven't had time to do. But as a human resources manager and getting to know other human resources managers over the years, I thought it was really interesting that most of us, not all of us, but most of us were involved in at least two things in our private lives. One was woodworking. There is an amazing number of human resource professionals who are involved in woodworking. And the other was hunting. There's a large number of us who enjoy hunting. And it just occurred to me one day why that is, because in human resources, we tend to spend a lot of time dealing with issues, not necessarily the fun issues. And so it's necessary, I think, for us to take an ugly pile of wood and build something nice out of it to help overcome all of that negative that we have to deal with. And hunting is great because you got to shoot something. Just, you know, some of these folks that come into your office and you got a minute. And of course, as the HR manager, what you do is you, whatever you're working on, it goes to the side and you say, sure, come on in. And then you go from there. In preparing for this, Brother Terry and I talked initially, you know, once he finally told me what he had in mind. And I remember we talked about the fact that I had never talked to a group of people called into full-time ministry. You know, my career was dealing with business professionals, the cold-hearted types. And so I thought it would be difficult for me to speak to a group of folks who are serving God full-time, because I wouldn't necessarily have the personal examples of on a particular topic to share with you. And he assured me that was okay, that I should deliver this much the same way I would if I were talking to a room full of business professionals. And I think you'll see that as we get into the material. And then we met later on with Brother John and with Pastor Cross to give them a brief overview of what we wanted to present to make sure that it was acceptable. And I think I mentioned it at that time, and these three gentlemen assured me that given whatever the situation might be, that they have experiences in ministry, obviously, and if they can think of something that would enhance the discussion, that they're going to speak up and share that relative to whatever the topic is we're talking about. So I say that just to remind you guys of what you promised to do. Now, Brother David, I noticed the TVs went dark. Oh, you did that. And this is not my laptop. So, Brother Terry, I hope I don't destroy it. Well, first of all, let me share something with you that we'll call this sort of an overlay for what we're going to talk about for the next couple of days. And most of you, as most people in ministry and out of ministry, you probably don't think of ministry as a business. But I want to suggest to you that, in fact, it is a type of business. When Brother Terry and I met with Pastor and Brother John, I brought this up, and Pastor agreed that, yeah, it's not a business in the cold, hard sense of the term, but it is a type of business. And in ministry, when you think of yourself as the pastor or the missionary, that makes you the equivalent of the manager or the boss. You have paid employees on your staff, your associate pastor, your youth pastor, full-time secretaries, office workers, and then you have lots of volunteers. And in the eyes of labor law, those would be looked at as unpaid employees. So I'm going to suggest that in order to facilitate growth and to protect itself from potential legal issues specific to labor, that the ministry should consider implementing some basic business rules, again specific to labor type issues, and provide leadership skills training for your leaders in your ministry. And I heard this on the radio recently. I assume everyone knows about the Christian Law Association. Well, the CLA, in a radio broadcast one day when I had the radio on, recommended that every Christian organization should have a written code of conduct. And further, that code of conduct should be presented to everyone who works in the ministry, and there should be a written record of that code of conduct being given to everyone who works in that ministry. Now, having come out of business and having spent around 42 years working for a Fortune 500 corporation, I can tell you that that got my attention, because in my company, as with in all of the companies that I associated with, they all had a guide to conduct. That's what we called ours, a guide to conduct. And part of my job was at least once a year to have a meeting with all the employees and put that document in their hand, and then to have a written record of the fact that I put that document in their hand. When we brought in a new hire, we'd give them a packet of information, and in that packet was that guide to conduct. The value comes when you have a legal challenge that's specific to a labor issue. If you have an individual who leaves your ministry or for whatever reason, and then they want to come back and file suit over something that is probably covered in that guide to conduct, you're going to find the value of that, not just that guide, but also that written record of the fact that you gave it to that person. You're going to find that to be of great value in a court of law. I can think of a lot of situations that I dealt with over the years where I dealt with lawsuits from former employees a lot. In fact, I dealt with lawsuits from active current employees a lot. And when I would contact our corporate lawyers in Minnesota, one of the first questions I would be asked is, did they receive the guide of conduct? All right, send us a copy of the record that shows that they got the code of conduct. So I agree with what the CLA is recommending here. If you haven't done that, that's something you need to think about doing. Now, in the materials that Brother Terry made reference to that are going to be available to all of you on the server, there's going to be some things in there that I've simply titled HO1, which from my generation we would actually have a handout. When, in fact, it's kind of, as an aside here, I was thinking I was going to give each one of you one of these to take back to wherever it was you were going. And Brother Terry says, that's just one more big thing to have to pack and worry about getting back to the field. We'll put it on a flash drive. That's what we thought about at first. And then Brother Peach, being even more high-tech than Brother Terry, said, well, we don't have to give him a flash drive. We'll just put it on the server. So when you see this material on the server, you're going to see three things titled HO1, HO2, and HO3. Those are simply because those were things I would have handed to you, handouts. We're not necessarily going to cover them today. But what I've just shared with you relative to ministry being a type of business, I've inserted that at the top of HL1 and highlighted in yellow and put my initials next to it so that you know those were my comments. But below that is a paper written by a business professional that was delivered to a group of business leaders. And it's very pertinent to what we're talking about today, and I hope you'll take the time to read that when you can. And when you're reading through that and see where this man talks about the business, I want you to think ministry. And when this man inserts the word leader or business leader, that's what I want you to think of yourself. That's you. So as you're reading that paper that's really directed toward a secular business, I want you to think in terms of how that applies to your ministry. Okay? Now, one of the first things I want to do here as we get started is to ask you the question of whether or not you're interested to know if you are a good leader or if maybe you would make a good leader. So what I want to do to start today is ask you to take a quick, easy, 8-question self-assessment. I'm going to put them up on the screen here and I'm going to read the questions. And what I want from you is in front of you is to simply answer each question. This is my test, Brother David, to see if I can do what you taught me yesterday. Okay. So what I'm going to ask you to do is look at these questions. Now, again, this is a self-assessment, and I want you to answer with an honest yes or no to each. And you don't have to share your answers with your neighbors at your table. But I do want to emphasize that it is a self-assessment, and I think that even though it is relatively simple, that it will help to point out directions for your own leadership development needs. Now, the value of this assessment is dependent upon how well you know yourself and how well you can assess yourself relative to these questions and how accurately you're able to judge your own attitudes and behaviors toward these. So question number one, there are 8 of them, and you answer them yes or no. And question number one, do you believe that people are basically good and want to do the right things, even if they sometimes don't know what those things are or don't know how to do them? So generally, do you believe that people are basically good and want to do the right things? A simple yes or no. Well, I can see smoke coming out of some of these ears. Question number two, do people naturally come to you and seek out about things, interests, problems, joys, or just passing the time? Do people just seem to naturally come to you for advice, for guidance? And number three, do you get along with most everyone? Even the difficult folks. There's always that person, from my experience, where if you pass them in the hall, you're very careful not to say, "How you doing today?" Because they're going to take 30 to 45 minutes and tell you how they're doing today. So certain people, you learn what not to say. You walk by and say, "Good morning, good to see you," and you keep on going. So do you get along with most everyone, even the difficult folks? Do you have a passion or a strong enthusiasm for the organization and its mission? And while you're thinking about that, I want to say to you, and I noticed this as I was going through this material, and I never really thought about this before the opportunity to do this training. But well, the material that I'm sharing with you today and tomorrow really comes from the secular world of business. But I hope you'll notice, as I noticed, that what I believe are the very strong Judeo-Christian fundamental faiths that built this country have found their way into modern business training. And it's still there today. And I think you're going to see that. I never noticed it, again, until I started preparing this presentation, and it just kind of jumped out at me. because I have a different mindset now, I think, than when I was working full-time in the world of business. But do you have a passion or a strong enthusiasm for the organization and its mission? Number five, are you approachable and available to those around you? And number six, are you able and willing to communicate frequently, emphasis frequently, and make communication a top priority in your leadership role? Number seven, do you possess a healthy measure of humility? Now, in this group and in the work that God's called you to do, that probably means something different. But try to imagine for a minute, I'm talking to a room full of business leaders, people who are responsible for millions of dollars and thousands of employees, and I ask them about their humility. And then number eight, are you able to make firm decisions and take actions while at the same time taking into account the needs and suggestions of others? So as the leader, as the ministry leader in this case, are you able to make the hard, tough decisions and then put together a difficult action plan to carry through on those decisions? Now, regardless of what you may think, your success as a leader or a potential leader is really based on the perceptions that others have of you. If you don't have anybody following, you can't be much of a leader. And when I talk about leaders, you know, leaders don't lead concrete floors and trees and machines. Leaders lead people. If you have no followers, it's Pastor made this comment I just remembered. He said, you know, if a person who thinks they're a leader does things to lose their followers, that leader is just out taking a walk all by themselves. There's nobody following. That's a paraphrase. I don't remember exactly what you said, Pastor. But the success of a leader, your success, will depend upon how others perceive you and your leadership skills. That's why it's a good idea to take these eight questions, and I'm going to recommend to you that you do that, and that's one of the handouts that's on the in the material that's available to you, to take this simple test and go to a trusted friend, a co-worker, someone who would give you an honest answer to these questions and have them assess you. Now, if you're willing to do that and you do that, you're gonna it'll help you to see yourself differently. It'll help you to assess your leadership skills, but it'll also possibly help you understand some areas where you can improve. So I would recommend that you take these materials later on and have other people assess you. Now, if you really want to be risky, have your spouse answer them for you. But, you know, I've been married to... I remember my wife going with me from time to time, and I love to introduce her as my first wife. I used to say it keeps her on her toes. But we've been married for 43 years, and I think I know how she might answer them, but I can never be totally sure. So if you want to take a risk, ask your spouse to do that. All right, so let's take a look at the answers and the explanations from this self-assessment. Now, good leaders, those with some experience and those who are good at leading people, they're going to look at these eight questions, and they're going to know that the answer for each of those eight questions should be yes. Let's read the explanations and find out why. Question number one was, do you believe that people are basically good and want to do the right things? Decades of social science research shows that throughout life, we get what we expect. Pastor George Zaris, who's a pastor of the church where I got saved, or where I joined after I got saved, he used to love to say, if you shoot for zero, that's probably what you're going to hit. The Pygmalion effect says the greater the expectation placed upon people, the better they perform. The implication there is that you want to challenge people, but you don't want to make it so easy that they get bored with it. And it says that the greater the expectation you place on them, the better the results you're going to get. So in today's world of leading people, if you really want to succeed, you really have to believe in people and expect the best of them. So the answer would have been yes. Number two, do people naturally come to you? If people seek you out, this is a good indicator that they admire you, they trust you, and they want to come to you even if they're coming to you to complain. So being a go-to person is a good indicator that people view you as a leader. Number three, do you get along with everyone, even those difficult people? Accepting people for who they are, seeing the best in them, and looking beyond their unfavorable qualities is essential to leadership success. And this next statement is one of those where I see Scripture. It's not from Scripture, but when you recognize the good, you will get more good. And the converse of that, of course, is if you focus on the negative, you're probably going to get more negative. As leaders, and certainly I can say from my experience, we're going to run into all kinds of people as we you serve in ministry, and as you have people come and go through your ministry, you're going to run into all types. I made a note here. I wanted to share a personal experience that I think relates to this. One of my assignments was at a manufacturing plant in Central Texas, and I'm careful because I know it's being recorded. I don't want to be too specific. But when I went into that facility of about 700 employees into the HR group, and by the way, when I first got started in that segment of industry, it was called a personnel department. At some point, they changed it to human resources to make them sound like machines, I suppose. But I was new in this facility, and I want to know people. I want to know about people. And I was told about this fellow who worked back in the packing department. Nobody liked this guy. Nobody wanted to work with this guy. He was a royal pain. All he ever did was complain. Not happy. Hated everybody. So I naturally had to go and seek this guy out. And so I went back and I found him and I introduced myself as the new HR guy. And it was, that first meeting, that first discussion, he was kind of feeling me out. He wasn't too sure, but scowling, and you could tell he just was mad at the world. But I kept going back. Not every day. I didn't want him to think I was stalking him or anything like that. But I kept going back and just trying to be friendly with the guy. And what I learned is that, yeah, he was angry at the world and everybody in it. I learned that our company at that time provided a type of profit sharing for all employees, even machine operators, even packers. This guy was so angry at the world that he refused that money, free money, so to speak. And we had to have him sign a document every year showing that he willingly refused this money. Why? I don't want anything I didn't earn. So through my efforts to get to know this fellow, I find out that he's angry because when his children were young, his wife left him and the children, totally removed herself from their lives. And he was left to raise those children on his own. He never remarried. He raised the kids. And from what I remember, he did a pretty good job raising them, made sure they had a good education and had a pretty decent life. But he continued to be angry at the world because of what his wife had done all those years ago. But we developed a pretty good relationship, and I saw the good and got more good. And I hope I remember this correctly, but I really believe that I was told later on that he started accepting that profit-sharing money. So when you recognize the good, you'll get more good. Question number four. Do you have a passion or a strong enthusiasm for the organization and its mission? Now remember, this is a question that I would ask a cold-hearted business professional, but think about how that applies to this group. Do you have passion or a strong enthusiasm for the organization and its mission? The answer, of course, should have been yes. If you don't believe in it, love it, you'll be unable to motivate, inspire, and lead others. Remember, you're leading other people. You're not leading machines or processes. If you've long since lost your enthusiasm for your work, then you're probably going to have leadership issues. And given what God's called you into, you probably ought to get on your knees and ask if that's what God really wants you to be doing. Every organization, especially ministry, I'm adding ministry here, every organization deserves to have people in leadership positions who believe in and are committed to what they're doing. Now again, I can say that to a plant manager, and it might mean one thing, but when I say it to you as a full-time worker in God's work, that really ought to mean something special. Number five, are you approachable and available to those around you? The answer should have been yes. If you make yourself scarce, you build distance between yourself and those you lead. Distance will not serve you well as a leader. You need to be where your people are. And this last statement here, think of your people not as an interruption, because your people are your work. You're a leader of people. And I remember as Terry, and I'm going to talk in more detail later about people who are appointed to leadership positions when they really shouldn't be. But I have an example of someone in one of the plants where I worked where the management promoted a guy to a supervisory position because he was really good at the work. He really knew the department, he knew the equipment, he knew a lot about the chemical processes that they were working with. And so they needed a supervisor, and they made this person a supervisor. And when it comes to doing the basic stuff, like having the pre-shift meeting to make sure everybody had an assignment, and going out every now and then to make sure that there were no safety issues, he did all of that really well. But when it comes to dealing with his people, to interacting with his people, he made himself scarce. He was afraid of these people. He was afraid of what they might ask him or ask him to do. And as a result, his people would go to other supervisors or to human resources with the issues that they really should have been talking to their leader about. So you need to be where your people are. It says, like I said here, your people are your work when you're the leader. And number six, are you able and willing to communicate frequently? Again, emphasis on frequently. And make communication a top priority in your leadership role. You talk to people. You email people. You write notes. You talk, you talk, you talk. It's essential as a leader of people. You say it clearly. You say it more often than you think you should. You say it in different ways. And then after you've said it, you go out where your people are and you ask them what they think you meant when you said so-and-so. You ask them what they think you meant from that email. You want to make sure that everybody's on the same page and that everybody's working toward achieving the same goal or that mission that you've all dedicated yourselves to. We all need to be toward achieving that mission. Strong communication skills are the fundamental cornerstone of being a good leader. And I'm going to tell you this now, and we'll talk about it more later, but in fact, I just thought of Ronald Reagan. You know, he was thought of as being the great communicator. Strong communication skills are a fundamental cornerstone of good leadership, and a huge component of being a good communicator is being an effective listener. If you're not a good listener, then you're not an effective communicator. And I think you'll see that later on in the presentation. Number seven, do you possess a healthy measure of humility? You have to give away some of the power to let others play a key part in what's going on. You can't be successful as a leader unless it's not about you. Skip down to the bottom of this slide. General, he was a colonel at one time, I'm sure. General Colin Powell said, There's no end to what you can accomplish if you don't care who gets the credit. And again, I say this to business professionals, and it's true. I remember telling people that a big part of their job is to make their boss look good. If you make your boss look good, your boss is going to make you look good. So there's no end to what people can accomplish if they don't care who gets the credit. And then number 8, are you able to make the firm, difficult decisions and then develop an action plan and implement that action plan while at the same time taking into account the needs and suggestions of others? A leader cannot be a fence walker like we see in Washington, D.C. Paralysis by analysis and timidity in decision-making are common problems, especially at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. One can't be a good leader without being willing to step up and make a decision. Even if you make the decision and later you find out it's wrong, you can admit it, you can correct it, but at least you've made a decision. People have seen you as the leader who was willing to step up and make the tough decision. Okay. Now, the question here was, how did you do? But again, you don't need to share that with your table partners, but just know that each answer should have been yes. And even if you didn't, that doesn't mean that you can't be a good leader, because you can learn. These leadership skills can be learned, and once learned, they can be practiced. And just like most everything else we do in life, we practice and we get better at it. When you folks gave your first sermon, you were probably very nervous, and you look back on it and you probably think, oh my goodness, I can't believe I did that. I can still remember as a young production supervisor and being told that the executives were coming down from Minnesota and I had to make a presentation. I had to tell them what's going on in my department. Now, I'd never done that before. I remember having the clip-on tie and standing up in a small conference room and seeing these execs out there and my shirt doing this and my hands were ice cold and I was sweating, and I don't know how I got through it, but I look back on it and think, oh my goodness, they probably should have fired me. But I wanted you to notice from these 8 questions, did you notice that none of the questions ask you about your intelligence or how much subject-related knowledge or experience you have, or how much direct work experience you have in the area that you're leading? It wasn't asked. So keep that in mind, because later on it's going to make sense.